was, it wasn't early by the time of the clock, but it was early in terms of where I wanted to be headed. Kind of interesting. Sometimes I prepare things, and I think this is going to be really short. And the biggest concern I had coming to you that summer was, I think I had enough to say. And I was so excited about the idea of us being called of God, and being special, and being chosen, and us remembering that. I didn't have enough time to talk about the rest of it, so I'm back to tell you more. It is, seems to me, a very good place to end. To love that sense of the fact that God knows our name, has called us, that we are special and chosen to God, sinking, because I think that is so important. So very important. And it's one of the reasons that Jennifer wanted to sing that song today, Amazing Grace, because of the way in which she feels. That speaks of how special and important we truly are to God. And that God has specifically called each and every one of us. But the scripture doesn't stop with God's calling us. It goes on from there. And I think that one of the biggest mistakes we can make in Christian faith is for us to stop with that piece of news. In many ways, Israel stopped there. They knew that they were chosen, and they knew that they were special. But they made this one mistake. They forgot about everybody else. And they would tend to gather in just as themselves and do that kind of great big group type of thing that said, isn't it great that we're Jews? And it's a shame the rest of the world isn't. And it would be a real shame for us to come together as Christians and celebrate the fact that we are loved by God in a way that did not remember, did not acknowledge the rest. For we are indeed special, and we are indeed loved by God, and we are indeed called and chosen. And you remember I asked you two weeks ago, to use your imagination and think back to those times in your life when you thought it would be really cool to be chosen and to be special. For the team to be split up and for the captain of the team to say, I want Scotty on my team. Man, can she kick a ball? We always felt that being chosen was something about us being special and having gifts and graces that others didn't have. It was something to lord over and say, well, I'm the prettiest, that's why I was chosen to come from the queen. Or, I'm the strongest, that's why I was chosen to be the football captain. Or, I'm the most popular, that's why I'm captain of the cheerleaders. And it could be very easy for us to slip into, I am so holy, and so righteous, in and of myself, that's why I've been chosen to be captain. And that's why you all have been chosen to be Christians, right? Because you are just better than everybody else, right? Now, I'm going to start laughing and giggling, because we know that isn't the truth. Not at all. In fact, if we started going around finding out who's the biggest sinner around here, most of us would be better in competition than if we were trying to figure out who was right most righteous. And we remember that the person who wrote a great deal of the New Testament, the Apostle Paul, said to himself, I'm cheating. God's choice in me has nothing to do with the fact that I'm better than anybody else. But that God's love is so big and so real and so strong that God can love me just do I. The scripture goes on to talk about the fact that we are not chosen for special privilege, meaning that we get to lord it over everybody else, but that we are chosen for special purpose. God has a special purpose and a special plan for those that God chooses. God does love us and call us special. God does, as the scriptures say, take us by the hand and keep us. But he does not keep us away from the rest of the world. And, as we know that the scripture also speaks to the person of Jesus Christ, we know that being kept does not always mean being kept perfectly safe. For even Jesus Christ endured much. But covenant is a very strong, powerful, important word. In fact, in many words, we would say New Testament and Old Testament. It would be just as correct to say Old Covenant and New Covenant. A covenant is a promise, a relationship, an agreement. There's almost no word that we use commonly that can contain all the importance of what it means. We do remember there's another time God gave us a covenant that the children have been talking about the Noah's Ark, the rainbow, in Sunday school. And God gave the rainbow in the sky. Remember there was the flood and there was the all, you know, 40 days on the ark during the rain, and then how much longer after the rain?
A year and a
day. A year and a day before they have to go ashore again. And when all the rain ceased and all the rain dried up, and God said, I'm never going to destroy the earth by flood again. And the sign of that covenant, that promise, that relationship and agreement, he put a rainbow in the sky. And now, God says, in a sense, that's who we are. That rainbow in the sky, that light to the nations. We are given as a covenant to the people. Isn't that a lot of responsibility, doesn't it? Maybe it was a lot better just being chosen special. Maybe, you know, this is kind of why I hate this sermon already. It felt so good. It's great that it's nice and warm love. And now we're stepping over here and we're talking about things that might sound like responsibility, that might sound like effort, that might sound like risk, you know? And I have to say, I feel a little bit like, how many of you have seen the Lord of the Rings? I know I don't have my Lord of the Rings crew here. Chat one, two. The Lord of the Rings, you may have read Tolkien's book, The Hobbit, or the his three Lord of the Rings, Fellowship of the Rings, the first one. Tolkien was a deeply religious man. He was a Christian. And his writing came out of his Christian faith. And although the Lord of the Rings is not an allegory to the Gospels, it does show many aspects of the Christian faith. And it starts, one of the key figures in it is the man, the hobbit, named Frodo, who finds that he has become the ring bearer, the one who must carry this great burden of ring, this evil, to make sure it's destroyed. And there's many times he looked at him and said, why did this come to me? It was really fun to be chosen when he was Bilbo's heir and got the house and he got the goodies. But it starts to become a heavy burden when he thinks about what he has carried. He said many times, why has this come to me? That it wouldn't have come to me. And many times he's reminded that some things are bigger than he is. We have been chosen. Literally, the burden we carry is not an evil burden to be destroyed. Jesus has already carried the burden of sin to the cross. Literally, the burden we carry to come to the people that we are to be is a burden of love. It's God's love for the world. That we might share that message that we ourselves have heard, that we are indeed God. That we are indeed special. That God has called them and is willing to nurture them in righteousness. And one day, too, give them this very special purpose of sharing God's burden for the world. A burden of His love. Now, how might we go about doing this? The scripture talks about that, too. It talks about the fact that we are called to be a covenant to the people, a light to the nation. And that we are also called to open the eyes of the blind. Now, and to bring the prisoners from the dungeon, and to prison, and from the prison, those who sit in darkness. Now, Jennifer is going to be teaching us, I think, a great deal about what it means to have your physical sight taken from you. And I think I'm really grateful for the lessons that she's going to teach us as a congregation on that. But I don't think this is just talking about the fact that we are all supposed to take Jennifer up front, lay hands on her, and say, be gone blind. Because God is really using Jennifer's blindness in a very unique way, I believe, in her life. And probably using her lack of sight to bring turn sight to men. Did you not hear the way she sung that song? Did that not open the eyes of your hearts and give you spiritual vision? Did that not help you to see the love and the passion of God? What we're talking about here of bringing sight to the blind is all those people out there walking around with 20/20 vision who cannot see that God is in their heart, who cannot see that they are loved, who cannot see that there is another life. Prisoners, are we supposed to go and tear down the walls of the jails and let all the people? There's probably some way from dreaming to get into the jail and the prison. Because there's some really blind people now who need to know what we know. And not from their bodies set free from themselves, but their hearts set free from the captivity of hate and bitterness, of sorrow and pain, of self-loathing, of vengeance. Oh, people that are walking around free can go anywhere they want, do anything they want. And yet are still waiting and afraid. Prisoners are in his arms. How does it take long for us to think of people who allow bitterness or hurt or crisis or consequences? Or the need for material things to bind up their life and make their life seem more like a prison than a place of joy. That's what we need to accomplish. That's how we need to be encouraging people. That's how we need to bring sight to the blind and freedom to that need. By simply sharing what has already happened in our life. Though we don't deserve it, though we are not righteous in and of ourselves, though we have no merit, we can lord over anybody else. We're not. And we're called to God. And if we can be, they can be too. They can know what we know. They can be free, and they can be wise. Yes, it may involve risk. It may sometimes be scary, and it may sometimes seem like we have no opportunity to do so. But I think that if we allow God to guide us and to keep us, and if we take seriously that we are lost, and that we share the burden of God, we have been chosen to share the burden of God's love with His.